O'Brien, when he came in on Sunday, said they've turned the page already. He said he and Brian Gain were in the building really early on Sunday morning, already looking ahead to next year. O'Brien said on Sunday he's excited this year to have three picks in the first two rounds.
I give Brian a lot of credit last year because I think that I do know that this is a very strong rookie class that we have in here. You know, a lot of these guys played a lot of snaps, you know, got a lot of good experience. But we didn't start picking until, you know, the second day. So I think that having, you know, some early round picks, you know, as long as we work hard at it and we all see it through the same set of eyes, and we obviously make a pick of a guy that's a talented guy that loves football, that, you know, is a great representative of the Houston Texans organization. And yeah, it's good. It's definitely good to have early picks.
It's so different now. Like when you go online and someone puts up a new mock draft. Like I like mock drafts. I know that they are what they are. You know, they're not all that accurate, but I like reading them because it is fun to kind of see who people think your team is going to take. It's fun to just pretend for a moment that that guy is on your team. Like this tackle from Florida. You know, you go watch some of his video on Draft Breakdown or whatever, and you go, "That's just kind of fun to imagine this guy protecting Deshaun Watson's blind side instead of Julione Davenport next year." We couldn't do any of that last year because the Texans didn't have a first and second round pick.
The first pick they had was number 68.
Yeah.
If you don't know, they've got 23, 54, and 55 this year.
Yeah, this is much better. This is a lot more fun. And O'Brien said on Sunday that, yeah, there's a lot of money that they have in free agency as well, but they like to build through the draft.
I don't think you want to build it through free agency. It's my personal belief. You want to build it through the draft. So you can mold the guys, you know, you can mold them into how I don't think you want to bring in a bunch of free agents, you know? So these are decisions that we have to make. And these are decisions that we're going to be talking about daily.
All right. So there's O'Brien talking about how this team wants to be built.
That's a decision you make after you sign a contract. You know, you got some stability.
His 4-year extension kicks in next year.
Right. Yeah. So you got some stability. You got time to build, you know, through the draft. But we could attack that in several ways because they haven't done a very good job of that in the past, right? Last year they obviously did, but they've
done a good job, generally speaking, going back to the beginning of the Rick Smith era in the first round, like with the most important picks.
Right.
They've always the Kevin Johnson is the rare first round failure for the Texans, going all the way back to Dwayne Brown in 08. Dwayne Brown, Brian, these are the first round. Brian Cushing, Kareem Jackson, J.J. Watt. Whitney Merciless, like Kareem Jackson was drafted in 2010. These are all guys who are still on the team. DeAndre Hopkins,
sure.
Clowney obviously was a number one overall pick. You know, Will Fuller, Deshaun Watson, they traded up to get. They've done a good job in the first round. It's been pretty much after that where it's been.
And that's what makes.
They did okay in the first round. After that, it's been a problem.
And that's what makes last year so striking. Yeah. Without a first and second round pick. Hey, if Martinez Rankin turns into a serviceable player, maybe even a starter in the interior line at some point, Justin Reed, Martinez Rankin, Jordan Atkins, Jordan Thomas, Kiki Cutie, Duke Ejiofor, Peter Kalambai. I mean, these are guys that feel like they're all going to be around for a while.
Well, they're contributors at least. You
they're
know,
contributors and it's depth, man. I mean, you saw this year how I think on the defensive side of the football, on the offensive side of the football, the offensive line was a problem going in. On the defensive side of the football, the injuries were an issue. So depth became a real issue really on both sides of the football at one level or another. So when he's talking about building depth, you can do some of that through free agency. There has to be you have to massage that formula, I guess. But it can definitely be helped with the draft this year.
So I put a list of five things together on the Houston Press for Brian Gain, like his early to-do list. His to-do list, like over the remainder of January, let's call it. Number five, they weren't planning on doing this, but we won't spend much time on it, but they got to find a new strength and conditioning guy. And the only reason I put it on the list, because they made such a big deal out of it last year, hiring the guy out of Denver, Luke Richeson.
Turns out to be one and done.
O'Brien talked about Luke Richeson more than he talked about the offensive line in training camp. It felt like, you know, the cafeteria and the weight room. Now, I wouldn't want to talk about the offensive line very much either.
Does this mean that Kale is back out in the dining room?
I don't know. It's a good question. Are they going to have fried foods in there? You know, are they going to? Can we get the occasional buffalo wing at the team cafeteria? You were obviously played in college at Arkansas, where I'm sure probably one of the best weight programs at that time in the country, and then playing in the NFL with the Cowboys. How big a deal behind the scenes is the guy that does the strength and conditioning stuff for an NFL team?
The game has changed. I mean, I'm old enough to where it was still about Olympic lifts, and it was still about bigger and stronger, and now it's more about range of motion, flexibility, the ability to stay healthy. the quick twitch, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot more dialed in right now. But I'll tell you a part of it that I think goes overlooked is one of my best friends is Dustin Kuhn, who trained here at Plex, which he trained several guys coming out the year that I worked out with him. He had four top 10 picks. He worked the organization here, but he was a hands-on trainer. He works at a high school now, and that high school won a state championship. And the first guy, the head coach, one of the greatest high school coaches in Arkansas history, he thanked Dustin Kuhn. He'd been there for 2 years, and the reason it is because before he got there, he'd averaged X number of knees and hamstrings and all these kind of issues. Since Dustin had came on, they had two in 2.5 or 3 years, and they'd won a state title. And so
we need that guy.
Right. Well, he's that good. He's an NFL caliber guy. He's just awfully comfortable right now. Up living in Walmart world.
Could he at least be a hamstring consultant?
That's right, a hamstring consultant, right? But you know, the game has changed to the point where it's about, like, a strength coach for Fuller and QT, a good strength coach will keep those guys on the field.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, at the end of the day, focusing on the right things will keep those guys on the field. Back in my day, it was about, hey, how much you benching, how much you squatting, can you clean this?
Yeah.
Can you move lateral?
Over under a number of guys doing yoga back in your day in NFL
very,
locker rooms.
Very few.
I'll put it at a half. Hey,
unless the instructor was hot, it was very, very yeah. few. Every now and then, old Jerry would walk, hot instructor.
Yeah,
and
dude,
yeah, I don't know what she's coaching, but I'm in.
I feel like Jerry Jones would have, if every team had to do yoga, I feel like the Cowboys would have the hottest yoga instructors of all the teams. Well,
look, yeah. I mean, how about the irony about him naming that yacht after his wife?
I hadn't heard the story yet.
He bought a $250 million yacht. It's like $100 million and change more than he actually paid for the Cowboys in the late 80s, and he named it after his wife, who he's been incredibly loyal and faithful to, as we know, for decades.
No doubt. I mean, look, here's...
We have the photos to disprove it.
Right. I mean, here's the deal. At the end of the day, Jerry's appreciation for beautiful women goes a long way for a third-string quarterback that doesn't ever get to touch a field, right? I mean, his appreciation for them being around the Dallas Cowboys goes, works wonders for me. So I appreciate it.
They're invaluable. Next championship they win, he's going to thank them first.
I tell them all the time. Cowboys were 5-11 all 3 years I was there. We were not very good, which is the salary cap was strapped, so I appreciate that. That's the only reason I was on the team. But at the end of the day, you go, good gosh. I mean, I couldn't imagine how that city treats a Super Bowl champion. I mean, they treated us like kings, and we weren't winning football games. But, boy, I couldn't imagine what they how they treated when they were winning Super Bowl.
Well, and the thing about the two players you mentioned that have been habitually injured, I'm less concerned about Kiki QT than I am Will Fuller because he's got a hamstring. It's the job is to fix the hamstring, strengthen the hamstring, get him strong enough to not re-injure the hamstring. With Fuller, it's been a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little upper body, a little lower body, and you have to start to wonder whether or not he's one of these guys that may or may not be able to handle the pounding of the NFL, regardless of his training regimen.
Rich, he's a guy that needs to be handled on an individual basis. Like, he's clearly a guy that – it's like a NASCAR. I mean, those guys don't have street tires. Those guys, you got to treat them completely different. And he's a guy that they need to figure out exactly what it is that makes his body tick the right way to where he can stay healthy and be durable. Because there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's elite speed in an elite world. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, staying on the field is the only concern for that guy. Coming out, he was a body catcher. He didn't catch it with his hands. Everybody talked, okay, as a receiver, can he catch it consistently enough as a number two to be the number two, be effective number two, opposite Hopkins? And now you look at him and go, hey, it's a no-brainer, but you got to keep him healthy. I mean, he's worth bringing a guy in and paying him whatever he needs to be paid throughout the season.
Like a private guy.
A private guy. There's no doubt about it. Find the best in the Houston area and go, hey, you got to go to this guy, and that's, we don't want to see you in our weight room. You go to that guy over there and get taken care of.
That's what makes it so tough to swallow because he's, I mean, not only got all those skills you just mentioned, but obviously has established a connection with Deshaun Watson.
Sure.
That's incredible. I think it's 11 touchdowns in 11 games from Watson.
Yep.
That's nuts.
All right, continuing to count down, we don't spend too much time on this one because it's fairly obvious. Number four, burn the Midnight Oil scouting offensive linemen, both in the building and outside the building. So they need to assess everybody who's there already, and obviously free agents and draft picks. One thing I think will be interesting, just as an aside, Nick Martin's heading into the last year of his deal. Texans usually extend guys, even mid-tier guys like that. with a year left on their deal. They'll do an extension for them to try to keep him around. Nick Martin, I don't think he was great this year, but he was probably their best offensive lineman, the center. I wonder if they'll do kind of what they did with Whitney a few years ago, where they feel like maybe there's some upside. And he can, if they extended Whitney Mercilus when Whitney still hadn't blossomed into the Mercilus he became, you know, from 15 through 17, I'll say. I don't think Whitney was great this year. But they did a deal that was super team friendly. And then the guy, you know, he buds into a borderline Pro Bowler. I wonder if they'll do something like that with Nick Martin. Like, they, you know, they feel like they're buying a growth stock, that kind of thing.
It's money well invested, well spent.
Do you like Martin?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I think, and not, I like him, but I think in the Texans situation, you can't afford to subtract.
Yeah.
I mean, with the group that you've got, you can't subtract your best two or one of your best two or three or four guys. You got to keep those guys and add the pieces around them. And so you end up, what you do, Sean, is you end up making your best, you know, your top two right now. You plug in the right one or two guys around them, then your best two right now become actually your third and fourth best.
Yeah.
And so, and not down the depth chart, but in your starting five, everybody talks about, we got to get our best five. I don't care what position they play, we got to get our best five on the field. You plug in a pretty good tackle, you plug in a first round tackle, then all of a sudden
it's a ripple effect.
And yeah. now you've got a formidable group at least. And like we've mentioned every time I'm on the show, I don't think they get any help.
Yeah, you know, from the play calling.
I mean, the Indianapolis Colts offensive line is getting a lot of love right now. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you walked in that room and you asked the offensive line coach, I don't know who's there now, but if it's the same one that was there when Luck was healthy to where he is now, he would tell you, he said, we're great. There's no doubt. We got some good players. But Andrew Luck allows us to play at the best of the best level as far as all five of our guys working together. And so they needed some help, man.
Number three, take inventory in the secondary. We've listed all the bodies this week that for sure will be back. There's four or five guys that for sure will be back. Rich and I have debated this, and I think a lot of people have debated it outside of this studio and on social media. Assuming that the price is equal or the price is reasonable for each guy, but you can only keep one, do you keep Tyrann Mathieu or do you keep Kareem Jackson?
Kareem Jackson.
Why?
Zero doubt. I think Mathieu really struggles in man-to-man coverage, and we're going to talk about it later. Or I hope he's going to talk about it when we cover the Texans game, but they really targeted him early, and I think he struggles. He struggles in man coverage, and he's a little bit of a risk a lot of times playing out of position. He's very, very aggressive. I think he's a guy that you've got to put a value on. Obviously, the locker room aspect of it, which, you know, I'm high on him because of that. I think he's a big keep because of what he can do in the locker room. But then within the system, when all the DBs start getting hurt around him, then he ends up playing out of position way too often and can be targeted. And I think that's what happened this year. So if I had to pick between the two, Mathieu would go. But I think there's a way to keep him, mm-hmm. assuming everybody else is healthy, play within the system, and you get the best of both worlds.
But isn't the last thing what you said about Mathieu pretty much what happened to Kareem also? He goes back to cornerback out of need, and he's taken advantage of.
Yeah, I think finding a lockdown corner is absolutely a must, as important as getting a tackle right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
In a perfect world, would they both be safeties? Kareem and Tyrann?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know,
because Tyrann also does a little double duty.
I think this year you ended up having a lot of safeties playing covering in space, and it was trouble. The right guy that got smoked several times this year.
Sharice Wright,
but
yeah.
Look, if he ever sees corner again, I'm throwing my hat in. Yeah, I mean, he may be a guy, Sean, that you put him at safety, and all of a sudden he can play. Now, you don't want to play a bunch of man with him, obviously.
Yeah.
But right. I'm telling you, man, look, he struggled.
I may have a double move he bites on.
No, no doubt. He bites double moves hard. But look, he was put on an island, man. And now I'm not saying it was ugly. And he struggled his tail off. Ain't no doubt about it. Some changes got to be made. He's not a corner. He's damn sure not a man corner. But he was really, really put on an island, brother. And it's in this league, that's tougher than hell, man. That's tough, especially in the playoffs. You know, there ain't very many. Most guys you see that get put on an island like he did are lockdown guys.
Yeah.
Are 20 mil a year guys. I mean, they're making it, you know. He ain't that guy for damn sure.
Number two, counting down, assess the books before free agency gets here. In other words, take a look at your cap situation with guys. I think there's a few veteran guys that maybe on a team that had a worse cap situation. Texans have a ton of cap space, so they may not have to worry about parting ways with guys right away. But even though he made the Pro Bowl this year, I think Lamar Miller's a guy who I think he's supposed to make $7 million next year. You know, Deontay Foreman's fully healthy. Do you want to pay Lamar Miller $7 million?
We better have a pretty good plan B in place.
I like Lamar, man.
But that's what I'm saying. They need to assess it at least. I know you like Lamar. Ryan Griffin, I think these two rookie tight ends, ideally they should be surpassing Ryan Griffin. I think he's only $3 or $4 million, but still, you may need that $3 or $4 million.
I agree with that.
And then Whitney Mercilus going into his last year. You know, is Whitney a guy that you want around long term? Is he a guy that you think is worth the? I think his cap hit is.
It's reasonable, I think.
His guaranteed money is all done. It's reasonable if you're getting the Whitney from 16 and 17.
Well, he didn't put up big numbers this year, but there are people who will tell you that he's integral to what they do on defense.
Yeah, I just wonder if they look at what he does on defense and say, boy, we can do this with Duke Ejiofor in his second year for a tenth the price or a 20th of the price.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that you look at and you go, he's integral, no doubt. There's no doubt he's an important part of this thing, but he is a guy that a very, let's say a fourth or fifth round draft pick could come in that fits that mold and has done it in college, and you could gain some confidence in that guy at a lot cheaper rate pretty quickly, yep. I would think. He's not a guy that just blows you away on a daily basis with how athletic he is or what he does for the system. Great fit, great feel, great instincts. But if a guy came along yeah. like that, he wouldn't have to be the best, the most highly rated defender to take that spot.
Ejiofor was a sixth round pick,
sure.
And he certainly looks like he's got some potential.
Yeah, Whitney's cap hit is $7.3 million this coming year. Dead money's a little over $1 million, so they'd save $6 million. And I'm not sitting here wanting to cut Whitney. Like, if they think he's worth that price and they've got the cap space to keep him, I think he still has the potential to be a productive player. But it almost felt like the things they were asking him to do was, I know they weren't doing this, I don't think, because you're just doing what you think is going to win football games. But, man, if you look at it, if you want a conspiracy theory, the way they were using Whitney this year certainly depressed his value. They weren't asking him to do a lot of things that were relevant statistically. They had him dropping in coverage a lot, and he was doing a lot of edge setting in the run game.
He was a setup man a lot in the game with the games that were being played up front, and then he was dropped into coverage a lot. So, he's definitely a guy that again, you know, there's a lot to be said. There's a value to put on a guy that's willing to do that kind of thing, you know. So, I don't, without being in the locker room, you know, I don't know. I think that a true man-to-man corner, and you have to be the greatest corner in America, just somebody that you can trust to put out there to not bite on the double moves, that you can put on an island when you play a T.Y. Hilton or when you play a big-time receiver that you've got to shade the safety over the top of and really, really expose that backside guy. Just somebody that's not just – looks like me out there covering him.
Yeah.
You know, just somebody that's not detrimental to the situation.
I still want to see Rich do a double move on Sharice Wright. If anybody from the Texans is listening and we can arrange that would be great. All
what
right.
double move would you go with? Slant and go.
Sluggo. Rich is a sluggo guy.
You're a sluggo guy.
Sluggo guy, yeah.
Ooh, that's tough on the ankles and knees, Rich. You sure you got it?
That's all right. He's lighter than he used to be.
As you said earlier, Clint, I'm thick from the ankles up to
okay,
my nose.
Okay, so rolling an ankle. You better keep pumping the meds, brother. You got to stick that.
All right, coming up next, the number one thing I think on Brian Gaines' list, I think most people would agree, is the Jadeveon Clowney situation. I want to play the audio from Clowney where Clowney talks about, and I'm thinking about my contract. I want to play that for Clint. And see what he thinks I want to see the score on the Clint Sterner truthometer on Clowney not thinking about his contract heading into this offseason. So we'll play that. And also, I want you guys to see if you can talk me out of this parlay that I'm going to put down on these wild card games this weekend as well. We'll do that next. So into the 4 o'clock hour we go. We're going through our Brian Gain to-do list. And the one that we just mentioned but didn't really get to was the Jadeveon Clowney situation, which is going to be, if we're handicapping what the biggest story would be in the offseason for the Texans, you know, by the time May rolls around, what will we have talked about the most? The draft obviously will be way up there because of the draft equity they have to deploy this year.
Yeah, the needs are a bigger story,
run down your top five for me again.
These are his to-dos. Strength and conditioning coach, inventory of the offensive line, inventory of the secondary, contracts that you may or may not want to shed or extend, and then Clowney.
Can I add one to your that should
absolutely.
Be in your top
that's
two?
Why I did the list. Yeah,
find an OC.
I want to get to that. This is Brian Gain's to do list. I don't know that Gain is the one who makes those decisions. I think Gain and O'Brien are peers.
Fair enough. Okay.
You know, I don't think Gain. I know that in a traditional structure in an NFL organization, it goes, you know, vertically down goes owner, GM, coach. Sometimes a team president is in between the owner and the GM. I get the sense that this relationship, I feel like that O'Brien and Brian Gain both report directly to Cal McNair is the sense I get, and that they're working jointly.
Gotcha.
O'Brien's
gotcha.
Not working
gotcha.
For Gain. But I want to talk about that OC thing. I mean, that is going to be a topic this offseason for sure, and I think that may be a topic that gets as nearly as much run as Clowney. Clowney was asked on Sunday about his contractual situation. Here's what he had to say.
Man, I went to sleep last night. I woke up and was thinking about how I'm going to get better for next season already. That's what's been on my mind. I think I can be a much better player. I didn't even think about a contract. I said to myself, if I come back and play well like I know I'm going to, the contract will take care of itself. I'm going to work on my craft and work on my game this offseason. That's what I'm worried about right now.
Do you believe Jadeveon Clowney that his contract is the furthest thing from his mind right now?
No chance.
Yeah, well, I think we're unanimous on that.
No chance. I mean, I know that he's probably looking through a little a different set of lenses than I would because of what's already in his bank account. But I tell you what, he'd be a fool if he wasn't worried about what's going to happen next for him. I mean, maybe he's just a guy that can. That functions better if he wipes that completely off his plate. I got to know, man. Got to know where I stand.
I think there's very few guys that don't have to know. And the one thing I like, though, is I think the 2014-2015 version of Jadeveon Clowney, and I know his contract had just kicked in then, but hypothetically, if he had to answer that question, I don't think it would have been as politically correct an answer as the one you just heard.
I think he's matured tremendously, yes. Man. I mean, look, and he made himself some money this year. I mean, I really believe that within this system and his willingness to do certain things, along with the flashes that you knew were already there, I think he's done himself really, really well.
He may not have elite sack totals, but for the last 2 years, he's been elite in terms of taking ball carriers down behind the line of scrimmage. He does that as well as anybody in the NFL.
He's disruptive. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you can put him in any style of defense. You can put him with his hand in the dirt. You can stand him up. You can put him in A-gap. You can put him out wide. He's very, very disruptive wherever he is. Now, Indy ran the ball directly at him really well, which I think that's always been the I've heard people say that if you're going to – the best thing to do is to run the football right at Clowney.
And
or,
Watt.
I mean, there's several of them. There's several of them that rush the passer well that are on the lighter side relative to defensive linemen that you can say, well, we want to run the football right at them. But – at the end of the day, he played well. He played up to expectations. In my opinion, he exceeded expectations because I just think the value in a guy that can be versatile in a defense is especially and do it at that level. Good gosh! I mean, with his tangibles, I mean that is a valuable young man right there.
All right. So it's funny you say you brought up the OC thing. I wanted to bring this up with you guys. Did you see what the Falcons are doing? The Falcons are. They have an assistant named Kyle Flood on their staff who was the head coach at Rutgers for four seasons.
I've heard that name. Yeah.
Yeah, earlier in the decade. So he had spent the last 2 years as their assistant offensive line coach. Okay. Dan Quinn, the Falcons head coach, who fired all of his coordinators this past offseason and probably the last stand for him.
Yeah.
You know, like if the Falcons don't get back to being a playoff team next year, I could see Dan Quinn getting fired in Atlanta. He announced today that Kyle Flood will have a new senior assistant role that includes in-game decision-making, clock management strategy, timeouts, and challenges.
We need us one of those guys.
Before joining the Falcons staff, Flood spent 4 years as the head coach at Rutgers, so he has a lot of experience in managing games. It's usually the head coach's job, but the head coach has a lot of things going on the sideline. And yes, to bring it back home here, to your point, Rich, O'Brien, in addition to having all this game management stuff going on, calls the plays.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on for Bill O'Brien. That hasn't always been the strongest part of Bill O'Brien's game, making these decisions. I think he's gotten marginally better, but I still think there's times where you go, okay, why is he doing this? And O'Brien has alluded to the fact that they have a process and they have guys that look at this. In terms of the optics of the whole situation, if I were O'Brien, I would do what the Atlanta Falcons are doing and announce who that guy is. Because it would at least, I think, quell some of the doubts externally. And I don't know that O'Brien cares about the doubts externally, but I think he cares more about them than he lets on.
The optics would improve.
Yeah, if you go, you know what? One, it's admitting a failure, right? It's admitting a flaw. I'm not very good at this, so I'm going to have somebody do this that is good at it. And two, it might be better. Like, it may, you know, whoever, if you have a process internally, then I think I think it's not a bad thing to let the public know, hey, this is the guy that handles that sort of thing. You know, that you have a guy that handles that sort of thing, I think would make people feel better about Bill O'Brien.
I think the statement you make when you put somebody that in place of, hey, I'm aware of the past, I'm aware of the situations that I've put the football team in, and I'm willing to address it to the point that I bring on some or I appoint someone to a position that's strictly what they're in charge of. I think that's huge. And look, man, at the end of the day, for me, it just shows me that a head coach is buttoned up. He's crossing his T's. He's dotting his I's. He's buttoned up. He's got game day ready. You know, I mean, that's a big part.
You just call that guy up in the booth and say, what are we doing
here? I don't think O'Brien would ever get that detailed if they did something like that because, you know, he'll tell you he needs to coach better, but that's about it. He's not going to get into the details of his mistakes or things where he may come up short.
No, right? but naming a guy like this and having a guy like this, I think would be, I think it's, first of all, I think forget about the optics. It's the right thing to do.
No question.
To have a guy that does that. Along those lines, because you brought up the OC thing, Clint, like I have a 3-point plan for Bill O'Brien to improve his Q rating with the fan base. I feel like for an 11-5 coach, every text and call we get, not every, but I feel like 80% of the calls we get that are angry in some way about the team, talk about the head coach in some fashion. Either he needs to hand off the play calling duties or he needs to be fired altogether, that kind of thing. I think some of it is a little over the top. I think some of it's warranted. Bill O'Brien's not a perfect coach. Bill O'Brien says Bill O'Brien's not a perfect coach. I think if he did these three things, I think people would feel a lot better about Bill O'Brien heading into next year. One is hire a guy like Dan Quinn did. You know, he didn't hire, Kyle Flood's been on the staff, but say, this is the guy, this is our director of game management, whatever it is. And this is the guy I go to do all these things. That's number one. Number two is, yes, I think if he handed play calling duties off to somebody else who the public had some confidence in, and who knows, some of the public may have confidence in somebody just not named O'Brien. You know, I think there's people that feel that way. Like, he needs to give it to somebody. Just to change things up, if nothing else. That's two. Number three is a different one, but I would have him do more of those Telestrator videos with John Harris. I feel like Bill O'Brien comes across really well in those videos. I'm serious.
He's comfortable, man.
Where he's comfortable with Johnny, he's drawing up the play, he's explaining why they do certain things. Like,
yeah,
it's,
you're right.
You know, it's one of those things where, okay, now I understand why he called this play or why he called that play. I'm serious. Part of it, like the first two are functional game things with a little bit of PR sprinkled in. The last one's all PR. But I think if people watch, like you watch Bill O'Brien and I watch those videos, I'm like, I like this Bill O'Brien. This Bill O'Brien sounds smart. I'd like to have a beer with this Bill O'Brien right here.
He's in his element.
My 3-point plan, Clinton Rich.
I love it.
3-point plan.
I love it. It consists of more chalk talk, baby. More board time with the fans. I love
it. Got that right.
As long as he has the Hams shirt on, I'm in.
Number four, do everything possible wearing a Hams t-shirt.